getting back to the specifics of Dolly Varley, it's an incredible project because it's got grade, it's pure silver, and it's in a safe jurisdiction. So when we talk about the press release that came out last Monday, and we talk about the big hits, and I'll get into them, what the viewer needs to understand is you're in the richest place on planet Earth for gold and silver mineralization. It's the richest 20 kilometers. There's been 155 million ounces of gold discovered and 1.2 billion ounces of silver. So you need to understand the backdrop. Sean Kunkun, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Andy.
Yeah, it was great meeting you in Florida. It was the first time we really met personally, even though I observed you from Rick's conference from afar, if you would. And full disclosure to all of our viewers, I and my family are actively buying shares of Dolly Varden, and my daughter is a shareholder. She has been for several months, if not, it's been over a year. It might be over a year. But anyways, I just want a full disclosure with that. And my goal really, Sean, is you've had a lot of news come out. I want to start with that and get to the bottom of that. And then I have some questions from the Rick Rule interview that I did about two and a half weeks ago. I wanted to ask you directly. So let's talk about your results that came out. I want to say it's been about a week. Tell me about that and let's dive a little bit into that. So,
well, sure. Again, thanks for having me on and for the opportunity to share Dolly Varden with your viewers. So look, we put out news last Monday, and I think it's important before we dig into that news release, just to kind of give a high level overview of what Dolly Varden is, and I'll try to keep it concise and simple. But essentially, you know, we're up in Northwest BC, it's an area called the Golden Triangle. It's home to some of the biggest and richest gold and silver mines on planet Earth. And there's really been three projects up there that have garnered international attention. So the Premier deposit, which throughout the 1930s was the most profitable gold mine in the world. And then in 1989, on hole 109, Eskay Creek was discovered. And Eskay was a mine that Barrick operated. And this is at a time when the gold price was sub 300 and was very profitable. They produced 3 million ounces of gold at almost 50 grams per ton. Alongside that was 160 million ounces of silver at 2.2 kilos. So, you know, it's an incredible, incredible area. And look, I'm a kid who grew up in Vancouver, BC, just south of the area. And I've spent 21 years in mining, but I never worked in BC. And the reason for that was I was told by my mentors that BC was a tough place, that there were better places to focus in Canada. You know, Quebec is known as one of the best in the world. There's some tax advantages. And anyway, so I worked in five or six territories, provinces throughout the country, never working in BC until there was a company called Pretium that opened the Brucejack mine, which is also in the Golden Triangle. And this is an example of what I would describe a very significant, modern, large, profitable gold mine. Today, it's being operated by Newmont. It's producing 300,000 ounces a year of gold. It is exceptionally high grade. And it was the Brucejack and the infrastructure that came into the Golden Triangle that brought me there in 2018. And a year later, I found out about this project called Dolly Varden. And the history of Dolly was, you know, at the time of Premier in the 1930s, around that era, the Dolly Varden mine, it was actually 1919, so Dolly predated Premier, but it was the richest silver mine in the British Empire. So it was a past producer. And then all throughout the 1950s, the Torbert mine, an adjacent deposit, was Canada's third largest silver mine. So there's this rich history at Dolly Varden. So, you know, here I am in 2019. I don't know, the silver price is 16, 17 bucks. And I had an idea. And the idea was, you know, through being around mining for 21 years, I watched silver outperform gold in 2010, 11. And then as I studied price history, I saw it did the same thing in 1980. And I thought to myself, if we were to head back into a precious metals bull market, we would have silver outperform gold. And so I took a big position in Dolly. I came in as CEO. And what I've what my strategy's been, Andy, is I had people at the time. So this is February 2020. I just came in as CEO, and they said, "Sean, take this mine back into production. You know, you've got 40 million ounces of high grade silver in the ground. Get back into production." And I said, "No." I said, "You know, that's not the strategy. The strategy here is I think silver's going dramatically higher." And I think what we should do is try to identify as much silver in the ground as possible. Let's build a mineral inventory story. But there's a lot more details than that. It's about the infrastructure. It's about regional consolidation. It's about the fact that Hecla, which has been listed on the New York Stock Exchange for over 130 years. Think about this, Andy. How many businesses have been around? Forget 100 years, but for 50 years or 25 years. If you think about the companies that dominate the world in business today, they're relatively new. Things change in our world. And the fact that you have a mining company, and it tells me where the work I'm putting in today, it's for generations. It's for legacy. I could build something that pays dividends that go well beyond my time on this planet. And that intrigues me and excites me. But getting back to the specifics of Dolly Varden, it's an incredible project because it's got grade, it's pure silver, and it's in a safe jurisdiction. So when we talk about the press release that came out last Monday, and we talk about the big hits, and I'll get into them, what the viewer needs to understand is you're in the richest place on planet Earth for gold and silver mineralization. It's the richest 20 kilometers. There's been 155 million ounces of gold discovered and 1.2 billion ounces of silver. So you need to understand the backdrop. And then if you look at Dolly, it was a great mine. And we think what was the great mine will once again be a great mine, but we've made it better by adding more silver, more gold, and so these drill results, look, we started.
Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
Because you gave a lot of stuff there that's very interesting, and I'd like to work that out before we get to the drill results, if that's okay.
That's great, yeah.
Okay. So you mentioned legacy. That is music to my ears. One of the things, the reason is, it is past experience. And you've been doing this a long time. What I've typically found, I've been doing this since 94. So probably a little bit longer than you, but you have a lot more experience than me. And probably the biggest red flag, and not even red flag, I'd say the biggest frustration I have in working in junior miner space, and I do invest actively in junior miners and drillers, is the whole promotional thing. And here one day, gone to the next, a guy trying to get a paycheck. So when you mention legacy and passing it on, well, I want to paraphrase. Passing on when you're gone, that resonates with me. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Jim Collins, but he's written some great business books and is good to great. And if you haven't read that, please read it. But it's how to make something. He has another book, Built to Last. What are the best companies that mean something? And it's like, okay, when the CEO leaves, they're still there and still improving. I guess there's not a question in there, but a comment. I am very grateful of that. The second thing is, if we could, most of my audience, they're US based, even though they come from all over the world, but most of my audience, they're not going to know what grades mean. They're not going to know Golden Triangle. I get this is a great spot, and I do know what you're talking about. But I want, for the sake of them, if you could break down your grades, what is a good grade, and what do you think you have? And then break down. Well, you don't really have to be, you already broke that down, but where you're at is truly special in that part of the world. If you want to talk a little bit more about that, please do. But if that will make sense.
Yes, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I'm glad that, you know, look, I find that, you know, we in this community, we have a lot in common and, you know, we appreciate a lot of the same things. And the fact that what resonates with you resonates with me, and it probably does with your viewers, that, you know, building something, you know, measuring twice, cutting once, you know, building something that lasts. But getting back to what you have to appreciate here is, look, we're in a part of the world that is, it lacks infrastructure. Okay. And this is not, there's some great mining operations in Nevada where you're a couple of hours outside of either Reno or Las Vegas. But one thing that we have up in the north is the projects are so rich, right? And what you have to appreciate is if you go back in a time machine, go back 100 years, the area is covered with glaciers, ice, snows a lot. There's no infrastructure. The price of the metals are 1/10 what they are today. Yet this is an area that's been profitably producing metal for 130 years. So today, now fast forward, 2024, you've got the deep water seaport. You've got the clean hydroelectric, the transmission lines that bring in low-cost power, clean low-cost power. You've got roads, and Andy, I've driven these roads. These roads are better up north than they are down here in the city. So now you've got the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You've got the glaciers that have melted away, right, or moved. And then you've got metal prices that are 10 times higher than where they were 25 years ago in the case of gold. And so that's what the audience has to appreciate. And at the same time, there has been some technological advances. So back then, the old timers, you know, they'd see something shiny sticking out of the ground and they'd go just dig it up. It, you know, on horseback, on donkey, or, you know, and the types of men that those conditions built are incredible, right? And I think about, you know, the rules and the regulations and some of the things that you have today, which are fantastic, but it built a different type of human being 100 years ago. And the area is so rich that it worked back then. But what my point to you today is, we're just scratching the surface. Like, what you have to appreciate is, you know, the 8 billion people that have populated the planet today, they've picked the low-hanging fruit. And so your choice as an investor, and I made this decision back in 2016. I was listening to Doug Casey. He was a, you know, famous speculator in our business. And he was talking about the advice he'd give to a younger self. And, you know, here I was, so I'm 43 today. You go back 8 years, I had a couple of young kids. And Casey was like, listen, you know, you need to go to Africa. You need to go into the jungles. You need to go and you need, and that's where you're going to make your mark. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go north. I'm not going to go into the jungles of Africa, but I'm going to go north where I think the opportunity, because of the lack of infrastructure, still there. And it's still in a safe country and it's stable. And it's a place that I'd bring my kids to. And so that's what I've done. And I don't know if I've answered your question, but the bottom line here is we're in a business that's super cyclical. You know, it's highly dependent on commodity prices or discovery. And in a cyclical business that's dependent upon discovery, my solution, where I've prospered over 21 years, has been focused on grade. So when I talk to you about our hits, we've had the richest hits in the richest area in 2022 and the end 2023 and in the first half of 2024. So, you know, look, I was told early in my career that if you work really hard, you get lucky, or, you know, luck favors the prepared mind. And we came in at the right time. So we got the timing right. We worked extremely hard and we've applied some of the failures of the past. You know, I've been around mining for a long time, and often a company will make some mistakes. Like, I'll give you a quick example. This is where most mining companies fail. And if your viewers are wanting to speculate on mining stocks, these are things to avoid. There's most of my contemporaries, most of my peers listen too much to the market, and they let the market drive their business decisions. So they'll say, you know, the market doesn't care about anything that is under 5 million ounces a year of silver production. But what is your geology dictating? You know, you've got to allow the project to drive the plan. And you know what? Most of these things don't work, right? They say only one in 10,000 anomalies becomes an economic project. You've got to allow the geology to drive it. And if the geology drives it, I hope I've answered your question, but it's a great area. We put out some extremely high grade results. So I have my strategy going into this year was this.
You have, by the way, you have answered my question. Go ahead.
So I've got 64 million ounces of silver. I've got 1 million ounces of gold, and that is verified by third parties based on certain spaces of drilling and a third-party audited report. Now, we've done a fair bit of drilling since we put out those numbers. So those numbers may be conservative. We may have found significantly more, but those are the numbers I have to reference because that's what's been audited. Now, so we've got the 64 million ounces. We've got this 1 million ounces of gold. Now, the silver grades are really good. You know, on a global average, this is, I would say, in the top 90 percentile in terms of grade for silver. And then in terms of gold, very, very rich. You know, I think it's very economic.
Can I ask you about grade?
Yeah, go for it.
So what is, for our listeners, what is a good grade and what should they be looking at?
Oh, that's a tough question because it depends on where, number one, location. It depends on, is it an open pit operation? Is it an underground operation? It depends on how much material you have. It depends on, do you have the sunk costs already in place? But if we want to keep it simple, and I can talk to gold in a very simple way here. If you've got an open pit operation, anything above a gram, if you've got size, like if you've got millions and millions and millions of ounces, you get to like the 1.2 grams per ton open pit, you usually can make money there. Underground, you want about five times that grade. So you want projects that are, you know, five, 6 grams per ton. But again, I can find you examples of operations that are running at 0.4 grams per ton, very, very, very profitably. I can find you operations that are underground at 3 grams per ton that are very successful. So there's a lot of factors. You got to look at, like, you know, what kind of rock are you hosted in? What type of you have to do to liberate the metal you're going for? And so there's a lot of things you have to consider, but generally, if you see
6 grams,
1 gram for open pit, 5 grams for underground, and that's gold. And then in terms of silver, again, it depends on much you're looking for, but I think if you can get over 250 grams per ton silver underground, you're in business. And then open.
Dolly is an underground operation.
Dolly is an underground operation. That's what
I'm going to answer, but I want people to know that. Yes.
Yeah. And I'll tell you the benefits. There's benefits to both underground and open pit. In my view, I focus on high grade underground operations because there's minimal disturbance. So, you know, I think the biggest challenge that any mining project faces is not the economics. It's not, you know, how big is the project? Can you get money to advance it? You know, those aren't the challenges that lead to projects not moving forward. The number one challenge is access. Does the community allow you to develop the project? And so my view is, if access is the biggest challenge, if I focused on a small hole in the ground versus something that you can see from outer space, a big open pit, what's the community going to be more open to? And so I believe in let's do the minimal disturbance. And you know, what's really cool at Dolly Varden is there's a past producing silver moly mine just south of us. And there's some pretty cool videos that we've done recently where we've actually focused on that project. And it looks gorgeous. Like the vegetation's come back, and you would never even know that that was a mining lake. Yeah. So, that's that. Yeah.
So that's very interesting, actually. And I'm glad you said that, in a very apolitical way, and really just a beautiful way, if you would, that. So on that topic, I used to own several oil wells in the Midwest, and you'd see the pump going up and down. But our whole thing is, what else can we do with this land? Not only take the oil out, but what can we do with the land so we farm or have cows grazing, if you would. And so, yeah, that means a lot to me with what you just said. So that's quite interesting. Okay, but let's go back to the project here then. Silver, you said you want about 6 grams of gold. What did you say? What does a silver mine typically need to be make it worth it?
Underground mines, I think once you get north of 250.
250. I have that written down.
Grams per ton. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Okay, so then what's the strategy then moving forward? You're about to go into that.
Yeah, so I've got this endowment, right? This mineral inventory. And some would say, you know, if you kind of tried to look at it through a silver equivalent lens, like if you took, you know, the silver and the gold, you know, it's about, I don't know, 140 million ounces of silver equivalent, 50% silver, 50% gold. And, you know, based on some of the discoveries we've made since we audited it, you know, are we kind of hanging out closer to 200 million ounces silver EQ? So one would say, well, Sean, if you've got 200 million ounces of silver in the ground, you could produce 20 million ounces for the next 2 decades. That's a pretty significant operation. So one should start thinking about wrapping some economics around the project, you know, putting out a preliminary economic assessment, maybe moving towards a pre-feasibility study and really understanding what it's going to cost and how you're going to move the project forward. So there's this part of my brain that says we need to look at de-risking and putting economics around it. And what do I mean? How do you de-risk an exploration project? You do tighter space drilling so that you have the confidence that, you know, as you go to mine these projects, that variability, as the deposit pinches and it swells, you know, you have a really good estimate of what you're going to be running on a monthly or quarterly basis. So there is a component to our approach where we are de-risking and we are moving towards an economic study. Okay. And so that's one component. The other component is, like I felt when silver was $16 5 years ago, I still think if we were to just stop expanding and went strictly down a path of development, it would be a mistake, because I think we're just starting to understand the discovery potential of the project. You know, we've been on this site now for a number of years. We've spent a lot of money, and my team, the reason they can put out drill results like they did last Monday, and we've had many, many other reports this year, is you're understanding certain things. I'll tell you some of those things. So you've got a 10-mile trend. You've got a 10-mile fault that was the event that allowed for the fluids, the metals, to come up in their liquid form and settle into the area. Okay?
Okay.
And so along that 10-mile, or, you know, we think of it in Canada as 15 kilometers. We think it's, you know, and so every 1,400 meters, every mile or so along that 10-mile fault, there's a cross-cutting event. And so there's a, you know, we use the term periodicity. There's a repeating pattern, right? There's a periodicity, and it's not unique to our project. If you, I've studied silver projects in Argentina and up in Alaska and in Mexico, and it's the same thing. It's this repeating pattern. And once an exploration team understands the repetition, but you need to do more than that. You also need to understand how the mineralization is plunging, what the geometry is, what the dip is. And then you can go in, and I don't want to say it's like shooting ducks in a barrel, but, you know, I've got a team that has really done a very good job of consistently making new discoveries. And their approach is this. They take where we've identified, like you take that past producing mine. We've got a past producing mine on site called Torbrit. And it's a beautiful, it looks like if you were to take an ice cream scoop out of a bucket, that's what the mineralization looks like. It looks like a scoop of ice cream. And what's nice about that is it's right at surface and it's wide. It's a wide ore body. So when you go to mine it, you're not hand sorting it. You can bring in a machine and you can mechanize and you can pull a lot of material and it'll lead to low cost mining. So what my team's done is they looked at that. So the old timers came in the 50s, they mined some of it. They pulled about 20 million ounces, but they left about 40 million ounces around it. Well, using the technologies, the geochemistry, the geophysics, understanding the geology, studying the other projects in the area, but also just stepping out and seeing if the vein extends. So in addition to the first component, which is the de-risking and moving to an economic study, we're also expanding and extending known deposits. And then the third component is trying to discover new ones. And what's interesting about Dolly is, you know, the silver we're finding, that we started finding initially, was an average grade of about 300 grams per ton. So historically at the Dolly Varden silver mine, they were mining 1,000 gram material. And then in the 50s, they were mining 466 gram material. We thought, based on where metal prices are today, you know, if we just scrapped everything that was under 150 grams per ton, we just didn't count that, but we focused on everything that was above 150 grams, our average grade is about 300. But what we're finding is as we chase these deposits incrementally deeper, they're not pinching, they're swelling. So they're getting wider and they're getting 2 times the grain. So we're consistently getting 600 gram material at width. So the 20, 30 meter wide zones, you know, we're getting some elevated kicks in there. We're getting, you know, some of the areas are 10 meters of 1,000 grams per ton, but I like to talk to the average because that's not going to be the average. But if I'm telling you that 250 is the number and we're around 300 conservatively, but it looks like it's getting a little richer at depth. Now, it needs to get richer at depth because it's going to cost more to get it out as it gets deeper. So this is a positive thing, but that's what Dolly is. I think for anybody, look, you know, this is the advice I'd give my mother, right? You talk about your daughter owning stock and advising family. You know, I remember in 2008, I got my mom to take a picture of me with an ounce of silver. I don't have a lot of these around the house. But so I had a pitcher with an ounce of silver and I had a Canadian $20 bill. And I wanted her to, you know, stamp that in time. And today I would need 2 of those bills to go after this ounce in Canadian dollar terms. But that's not why I got into it. I think it's going to go dramatically higher. But my point here is I said, you know, Mom, start with the physical. Yeah. And then if you want to speculate, right? There, you can buy an ETF, you can buy a producer, you can buy a royalty company. But if you want to go further down the food chain, I've positioned my company. And this is a company that when I got involved was valued at 20 million Canadian dollars. It's valued at, so I think today it's valued at $350 million. It's been higher, but we've had a big pullback here. We were $100 million higher when you and I got together in person. And that was what, a couple of weeks ago?
8 weeks ago.
So we were up to 450. And so today, you know, call the average investor is up about 700% for those who got behind me when I started 5 years ago. The market cap of the company has gone up about 2,000%. And I just think we haven't, like, we're just starting to see silver begin to get properly valued.
Yeah, so I want to talk about the macro on that in just a second, but I want to go back to, I interviewed Rick Rule about 2 weeks ago after we met, and he talked about tying two projects together. And I want to say, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to say old, but the Dolly Varden, if you would, the traditional Dolly Varden project, but the Home State project, tying those two together. I know what he means, but I want you to tell me, what does he mean and how?
One thing that I love that Rick talks about is, you know, answering the unanswered questions. Like, Rick's an investor. Rick's given companies hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, through himself and through others. But he's giving those companies money to answer unanswered questions. And I think for Rick, when he looks at Dolly Varden, and I've spent some time with him and attended his conference, and he looks at Dolly, and what Dolly did was really good, which was, when the prices of the metals were lower, you had two neighboring deposits. They're just a few miles apart, about 5 kilometers apart. You had Dolly and you had Homestake. And what I did is I put them under one ownership. And then again, going back to that periodicity, I think there should be more. So what Rick's looking at is, look, these are very significant. It's good that you brought them together. Rick wasn't, you know, that interested in just the Dolly, but when we brought in the Homestake, he's like, okay, I'll become a shareholder. And we talked to him about this idea of connecting the deposits, right? And so that's one of the unanswered questions. Can we connect these various deposits? And then just beyond that, can we be successful at expanding and extending the deposits individually? So Rick talks about, you know, there's a number of ways that the company can be successful. Number one, if we just do what we have successfully done, which is expand and extend and make new discoveries. But the real prize in his mind is if we can show that this is one system. And my experience in mining and exploration and development is, when two systems come together and meet, sometimes it leads to some pretty special things in terms of grade and tonnage. So that is, I feel like you've got a foundational asset that has enough, but you have the potential for it to turn into one of the greats, like Premier, like SV, like Brucejack, up in the neighborhood.
Well said. Well said. So let's talk about the macro of silver and gold. You're on record of saying a lot of different things, especially like the paper markets versus the physical. You just mentioned your mother. My mother's an investor and soon to be an investor with you. And I'll let this video drop first before she starts buying. But talk to me about the outlook on the price of gold and silver, and also the divorce that seems to be happening, not divorce, but the coming together actually of the paper market and the physical. It has been divorced, but it's coming together, it seems to be. Work that out for me.
Okay. So I really think, like, I'm a gold bug. Like, I'm a kid that, you know, I grew up in Vancouver, but my family, you know, my dad moved over from India when he was 21, right? So I remember when I was a kid, 13, 14, 15, I'd watch my parents, who worked really hard. My dad worked at a sawmill for 44 years. And I would watch him trade his hard labor in for this yellow metal. And I kind of thought he was nuts, and I thought he was making a mistake, because I thought, nowhere have I been taught about this yellow metal, and I just viewed it as jewelry. But as, you know, and as I grew up, and as I got into the mining business, and I got on the roads, and I started learning that, you know, the history of gold and silver, I thought, wow, my dad had it figured out. And you know, if more people saved in gold and silver than in fiat currency, they'd be far better off. But my outlook for the metal is this, like, if you go back 25 years, you know, we've been in an environment where the US dollar has reigned supreme for, you know, what, 60, 70 years? It's been dominating.
Right.
It's losing some of that supremacy, though. And the evidence of that is if you go back to around the year 2000, and if you went to any global central bank, 3 out of 4 of their notes would have been US dollars. So 75% of global reserves were dollar denominated. Today, that number's closer to 50%. It's 58%. It's gone from 72 to 58. So in that 14% reduction, the gold price has gone up 10 times in value. And if you look at the rhetoric that's coming out of Vladimir Putin, or, you know, and you look at how the world's reacted to the Ukraine war, where, you know, the breadbasket of the world and the countries that rely on it, like India, have actually not sided, you know, the biggest democracy in the world, which has always been pro-America, has sided with Russia because of their food security needs. And so we're seeing a bifurcation of the world, and we're witnessing the establishment of a new monetary system. And it doesn't happen overnight, or maybe it will, but so far it's been a slow. So I think gold's relevance in this new world will continue to dominate. We've gone through a period from 1980 to 2000 where gold was not the asset you wanted to own, you know, because it had such a good run in the 70s, it needed to digest that big move from 35 to 800, consolidate, pull back, and find a base actually 10 times the price. And so, you know, I think, look, on the gold side, gold is money. And the world is starting to move away from the fiat currencies into gold. We've seen some evidence, like in 2019, gold was classified as a tier one asset. And there, and that sent the price from 1300 to 2000 in about a 13-month period. And it's sustained that price move, and it's actually appreciated another 50%. So I think, look, gold's the leader. Gold is for the kings. Gold is money, and has been for 5,000 years. Now, what is silver? Well, my study of silver has, you know, there's this relationship historically, about a 16-to-1 relationship. And if you go back to these currencies that have dominated the world, whether it was the US dollar, the pound sterling, just to look at the last two, there was a relationship between gold and silver and the currencies, and that's why they were adopted. Okay. They weren't adopted because of any other reason other than the fact that they were linked to gold and silver. And so, and the relationship was at 16-to-1. And I can tell you, being in the mining industry for 2 decades, there's a natural relationship of 16-to-1 in terms of what's naturally endowed in the world's, in the Earth's crust. For every 1 ounce of gold, there's 16 ounces of silver. But what's happened is that it's actually moved to 7-to-1. And what I mean by that is because we've been producing these metals for thousands of years, right? And really over the last 400 years, we've been doing it globally. If you go back 400 years, the richest man in the world was the Emperor of China, and he got there through taxing his citizens in silver. And it was really the start of global trade, and it was really the beginning of a new era in the world. And so my point here is since that, we've depleted all of our silver resources to the point where I would actually argue that we need to have a new mark, which is what we're mining, 7-to-1, not 16-to-1. And it's, and this coin here was given to me 3 years ago by Eric Sprong. who talked about how he thought in this next bull market, we were going to 10 to 1. We're at 80 to 1 right now. It takes 8 ounces of silver to get 1 ounce of gold. And he talked then, 3 years ago, about $300 silver. And so, and Eric's probably invested something like $20 million in Dolly Varden. He's about a 10% shareholder. And so he's put his money where his mouth is, and he's been a very successful, you know, billionaire, successful mining entrepreneur and investor. But so I think, look, I think silver is going, you know, if you look at history, silver lags and then it outperforms gold. So that can, but there's something that's changed in the last 100 years. And what's changed is, 100 years ago, only 10% of the silver was used outside of investment in jewelry. Today, it's about 55%. So 55% of the silver that we're mining is going into industry, whether it's, you know, and I think your viewers are probably sophisticated and they know there, you know, there's these new EV batteries and there's the solar that's taken over. Solar panels, and you're not recycling the silver in the solar panels. So look, I think that what's interesting for silver is this time could be slightly more intense in terms of the move. And that's why I made a decision, despite being a gold bug, that, you know what, I'm going to go really, really heavy. So 50% of my portfolio is silver centric. And so look, I think silver, I think we're going to actually get to a point by the end of next year where industry is going to consume all the silver that we mine. And Andy, look, like, we've been in a bear market for silver for a long time, but the investment demand is always around 30%. No, look, I've got a lot of physical silver. You know, I've saved in silver. Anytime I have some extra capital, I'll go out and buy gold and silver. And I've been buying a lot more silver because at 80 to 1, I just think it's a better buy than gold today. And so I'm going to be buying my silver just like, you know, that 30% of the market, the billion ounce market, 300 million ounces a year of demand goes for that fit for the investment. But what I'm telling you is 100% of what we mine, which is probably going to be about 800 million ounces next year, is going to be consumed by industry. So where are guys like me going to get our silver? What are we going to have to pay for it? And, you know, it's at the same time, the mining has gone from about 1.2 billion ounces a year down to 800. Now, we're recycling about 150 million ounces. So last year, you could get your hands on about 950 million ounces, but the demand was about 200 million ounces more than the recycling and the mine supply. And I'll tell you, like in Q1 of this year, India and solar ate up a third of the market. And I'll tell you, like on the streets of Mumbai and Delhi today, people that are my age, and so you've got this wealth that's moving from west to east. You have poor in China, in India, that are now, you know, their diets are better, they've got more savings, and there's more of a middle class forming, and they're priced out of gold and rupees. So it's the, for my generation of people, they're not doing what my dad was doing, which was going out and getting gold. They're just out of that market. It's unattainable. So what are they doing? They're coming.
Yeah. So I wasn't going to ask this, but I will to you. And I want to ask one more question after this. Do you see the market, you mentioned India, do you see the silver market leaving? I don't want to say leaving, but shifting from the NYMEX and the LME to Shanghai, to Delhi. What do you see that happening because of this disparity, I guess, if you would, in the paper market? And I'm not trying to fish for anything either, but I do see problems.
If you would, in the NYMEX
the New York and the LME. Could you see a rapid
covering, if you would?
I don't know. I just think that there's, to answer, I can just say yes, but the reality is I believe, like I'm a big believer in the West. And I think that, you know, I think it was Roosevelt that asked the American citizen to trade in his gold for 20 US dollars back in around 1930. And he didn't ask for silver. And I think there is a big part of the US population that has a relationship with silver that is even stronger than the relationship with gold. And I believe that there's, you know, and when I think of the West, you know, I think of places like Zurich, Switzerland, or I think of small towns throughout Germany that experienced, you know, the Weimar Republic and that inflationary event. I think about the UK, you know, pound sterling. So I really think that it's going to be, yes, you've got, there's, you know, more billionaires in Indonesia than most people would even realize. And most of them have got there through the mining industry, hundreds and hundreds of them. And I think, you know, how do we compete with the numbers out of China, out of India, out of the Eastern world? But I don't know. I think what's going to drive this market is it's going to be 50-50. It's going to be, and we're starting to see that. We're starting to see, you know, the reported gold buying out of China has slowed, yet the price is accelerating to the upside. That is Western buying. So I think that, yeah, you know what, like, you know, the paper market, you know, here doesn't reflect the real price of the physical. It's probably understated by at least 15%, whereas you don't see that in Shanghai. So to answer your question, yes, but I don't think the U.S. or the Western investor or buyer is out. I think that we're going to see. And again, who's going to be the biggest benefactor of this price rise in precious metals? I actually think it's going to be the American, that reserve at Fort Knox, the ounces that JP Morgan's sitting on. I think that, you know, I don't want to use the term manipulation, but I think the manipulation is to the upside.
That's a really good answer. I want to end on this. I want, if you can, give me your website and your tickers, both over the counter as well as in Toronto. But I want you to tell the story of Dolly Varden's name. He told it to me in Florida, but tell it to me again. I shared with you, I'm from Alaska. And well, it's kind of silly, but I'd be first interested in your company because I was familiar with your name being Alaskan. So tell me about that. And then give me your company website and tickers.
Yeah, there's actually a great book on my bookshelf there. Steel Rails and Silver Dreams, the story of Dolly Varden. But no, to answer your question, a lot of people, you know, come up to me at mining shows and they're like, are you that Dolly Parton? Where's Dolly? And Dolly Varden was a character in a Charles Dickens novel called Barnaby Rudge. And Dolly's character was this fashionista who wore these elaborate dresses, who started a fashion trend. And then there was a fish discovered. And when the fish was discovered, it was named after the Dickens character. And there's a number of mines, including the one that our company, our namesake. So there is a Dolly Varden project in Nevada. But anyway, so the mine got its name from the fish. The fish got its name from the Dickens character. That's the history.
Good answer. So you told that story to me in Florida. Just so everybody knows, I was at one time, a long time ago, being from Alaska, I was a fisherman, and that was the most beautiful fish. Everybody go, oh, you got it, Dolly Varden. Oh, look at that Dolly. So people wanted to buy your stock, invest in you. How did they do that?
So we trade in Canada under the symbol DV. We trade in on the OTC under DOLLF. We also trade on Frankfurt. And then we've got a website, Dolly, D-O-L-L-Y, Varden, V-A-R-D-E-N, dollyvardensilver.com. We're pretty active on all the social media platforms, including X at Silver Varden. So look, you know, look, we love talking to investors. We've got a toll-free number on the site. You can email us and, you know, we're happy to talk about silver, our project, other projects. Yeah, we love what we do.
Excellent. I will link to all of this in the show notes. Sean, I kept you way too long. I didn't mean to go this long, but I enjoyed it immensely. Thank you for your time.
You too, Andy. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.